Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. This hour, we're going to take a very close look at Jared Kushner. We're going to have two guests with us, a Washington Post reporter who's looked into Kushner's holdings. What does he own right now? What has he sold within his vast real estate empire? How much is it worth? And how is his family involved in its management? We will speak with our guest, the Washington Post reporter, Jonathan O'Connell, in just a moment. A little bit later in the hour, a recent ProPublica investigation found that tenants of several Baltimore area apartment complexes owned by Jared Kushner's real estate company, people have said the units are kept in disrepair. Tenants who try to move out are threatened and they are sued. If you fail to pay rent on time, you are humiliated. And these cases, and it's not all that much money, it is to people who don't have any money, but $3,000 that you may owe, and they are hounded year after year to make sure that $3,000, which is impossible to come up with if you're in really bad circumstances, to pay. How do you do that? It's a very lengthy article and a good one. So, we are going to talk about him this hour. And welcome your phone calls as well. Our phone system is finally up and running, so you can call in and double the number of calls this hour because we missed last hour. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org, Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show, Twitter at K Dunn Show. Jonathan O'Connell is a reporter at The Washington Post. He covers economic development, commercial real estate, and the Trump Organization, and he's with us the first half hour. And we should also say he is a graduate of the University of Wisconsin. Madison, as many of our guests are. Hello, Jonathan. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you. It's hard to figure out what all these people own because they have so incredibly much money and their holdings seem to be pretty vast. When Jared Kushner became whatever he is, special counsel, senior aide to the president, what did he have to give up? What did he give up?
Well, yeah, I think you're right that he owns so many different properties and companies that it's just initially very difficult to figure out what any of them are. So what he has to do when he became what he had to do when he became part of the White House staff is he had to disclose his holdings, just like anybody else who joins the staff. And so he filed a document called a personal financial disclosure, which lists, you know, something about everything that he owns, including, his credit cards, his checking account, but also hundreds and hundreds of different LLCs and corporations, that many of which are attached to real estate. What we know is that of his real estate holdings, he kept about 90% of the companies. Mm. And he lists those companies that he's kept in terms of real estate at being valued somewhere between $132 million and $407 million. Ooh. So that's a wide range.
Right.
Even that's based on estimates that he and his attorneys have made on how much his properties are worth. And, those can be variable sometimes when the market goes up or down. But the short answer to your question is he hasn't had to give up very much.
Hmm. And that's because he just chose not to? Wasn't he asked to divest most of it, the family was, just to avoid potential conflicts of interest?
Right. So this stems a little bit from kind of the strategy or the direction that this White House has taken. Obviously, the president had a sort of a similar professional background. They're both real estate developers.
Right.
They both came up in their family's companies working for their dads, and both owned a whole bunch of apartments in like the kind of outskirts of Manhattan, New York City area. And they both, when they got kind of into later in their careers, Mr. Trump started buying, downtown Manhattan office towers, and so did Jared Kushner. So you can sort of see their careers shaping up differently. And then when Mr. Trump became president, he made a decision which, in many ways, is kind of unprecedented, to retain most of what he owned. So right now, while he is president, President Trump still owns interest in hundreds of millions of dollars worth of real estate, mostly in the New York area. And Jared Kushner, when he joined Mr. Trump's staff, did the same thing. He decided he would sell a small slice of his real estate on the advice of his attorneys, but decided to keep the vast majority of it, and has sort of said, you know, I'll try to steer clear of the issues that might affect my real estate for the most part, but otherwise I'm going to keep them.
Mm. Well, and now he's under investigation for maybe not steering clear enough. Who knows where these investigations are going to go with him? He's got the spotlight, and not in a very good way these days, huh?
Yeah, I mean, the Russia thing, obviously, there's some very serious questions about the meetings that he took and what he was doing in those meetings, and a lot of that reporting is probably still to come. But the kind of continual sort of questions that come up, both about President Trump and Jared Kushner, are the result of them keeping all of these businesses mm-hmm. and ownership stakes while they're in office working for the American people. So, you know, you'll see with Mr. Trump, his course here in Virginia hosted the PGA Senior Championships this past weekend, and Mr. Trump still owns that course. And as a result, there are going to be questions about who is spending money there, sure. why are they spending that money, do the people who are spending money at his course think that they will maybe have some access to the White House or the president in some way. And the same thing with Mr. Kushner. You know, Jared Kushner's sister recently was in the news, of course, because she was in China looking for wealthy investors for one of the company's real estate projects in New Jersey. And that specific project, Jared decided to sell his stake in as he entered the White House. But there are many other projects and other parts related to that project that he continues to own. And how he distinguishes between what he needed to sell and what he thought was okay to keep, those lines are all very gray.
And that whole China thing of selling those visas to wealthy investors, was that, I think I read somewhere that it may be an indication that some of the properties might be in trouble, some of the investments were in trouble, were they?
You know, I think, you know, actually a lot of this would be very normal real estate practice for both Mr. Trump and Mr. Kushner if they weren't running the country now. you know, so for instance, the program that the Kushner company is using to try to finance some of its real estate, it's called the EB-5 visa program. It's existed for a number of years. It is controversial. Congress has looked at reforming it. Mm-hmm. But in effect, it is an opportunity for wealthy foreigners to invest, I think it's $500,000 up to $500,000 in an American real estate project, so long as that real estate project creates a certain number of American jobs. And, you know, it's not just the Kushners and the Trumps that use it. It's all sorts of different real estate developers in Washington, you know, New York, elsewhere, who are financing their projects in part by these sort of investment for visa programs. And the Chinese have taken the most advantage of this by a wide margin of any country. So again, having you know, Jared Kushner's sister out there pitching their product to wealthy Chinese folks, nothing unusual about that typically. But right now, Jared Kushner is in the White House. He is the president's point person on a number of foreign relationships. He's spoken with Chinese officials while in the White House. And there are some people who are uncomfortable by the fact that his sister is out here pitching Chinese wealthy Chinese folks while Jared is in the White House managing U.S.-Chinese relations to a degree.
Yeah, while people without very much money who are from Mexico are being deported.
Right. Well, that is another issue. So, I mean, part of this also is that not only is Jared Kushner's portfolio of companies so wide and so broad, but his portfolio of responsibilities in the White House is
right.
very wide and growing also. I mean, he has been assigned at various times, you know, solving Middle East peace or finally achieving Middle East peace, you know, solving the opioid crisis. He's kind of running this group that is trying to solve government problems using private sector solutions. So he, you know, he's obviously has been very well trusted by the president. And he's been giving a lot of responsibility, and it just makes it more difficult to know what he's working on sometimes.
Mm-hmm. And why all that trust? Is it because their careers are really remarkably similar? Is it because he understands Jared's business mind, that he understands what he's been doing because he did the very same thing, the president?
That's a good question. You know, before President Trump was elected, and I covered his business career quite a bit, and it was one thing about the Trump family people would say is, like, they're very close. They stick together. Mm-hmm. You know, Mr. Trump's office in New York is right next to the offices of Eric Don Jr. and Ivanka Trump when they were all working together at the company. And now Ivanka has moved to Washington with Jared, who is her husband. So Jared is the president's son-in-law. He also knows the president's business. He's, I think, you know, part of the closest inner circle that the president has in terms of people he relies on and trusts. And, you know, the interesting thing about it, I think, there, you know, there are parallels between Jared Kushner and Donald Trump in terms of their careers. And also, I think, some of the strategies that they've taken in their careers. But their personas could not be more different. You know, Mr. Trump, obviously, is a very sort of brash, opinionated, not afraid to speak his mind in any kind of context, whereas people describe Jared Kushner as much more reserved, quiet, almost kind of gentle in the way that he interacts with people.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit more about Jared's father and the relationship with his father. And they were in business together for a while. Is that how Jared started?
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of a defining story of Jared Kushner's life. Jared's father is Charles Kushner, a very well-respected developer in New Jersey, until in 2005 he was convicted on a number of federal charges, tax evasion, witness tampering, and making illegal campaign donations while he was running the Kushner Company in New Jersey. And Charlie Kushner went to prison in Alabama for over a year. At the time, Jared was, you know, in his mid-20s. He was still a graduate student. And, you know, as a 25-year-old, he was suddenly running his father's company.
25?
And
oh, my gosh.
25 years old.
Really?
In law school at NYU at the time, getting, I think, an MBA also. And suddenly he is running a company with, you know, around 1,000 employees, managing thousands of apartments, which I think you're getting to the next half hour here, which is another kind of series of questions about Jared Kushner. But... So he's a 25-year-old running a really big company with responsibility for hundreds of people. And you know, one of the early decisions he made when his father was coming out of prison, you know, was that he was going to make a really big mark in the industry in a way that would help restore the family's name. You know, he didn't want to just keep managing New Jersey apartment buildings and buy more of them and sell them and kind of do things behind the scenes. He wanted to restore the Kushner name. And... one way he did that is he bought, at the time, the most expensive, he's paid the most ever paid for an American office building by buying this building in Manhattan, 666 Fifth Avenue, which is now, even though he has divested his stake of it, that's become a source of a lot of inquiry and questions since he entered the White House.
Mm. Why? Because Russian money may have been involved?
Well, nobody has said that. I think it's, you know, part of the reason it was in the news is because after Mr. Trump won the election, the Kushner companies started negotiating with a Chinese insurance giant, Anbang, to invest hundreds of millions of dollars in that building. And again, so now we're talking about the Kushner company, where Jared no longer works, speaking with major Chinese investors about the family's real estate, while Jared Kushner is in the White House managing relations with the Chinese government.
Hmm.
So, you know, there may not be any more connections than just that, and that may make some people comfortable and some people uncomfortable. But at some point, just continuing to own these properties while in the White House is just kind of a constant source of problems because these questions keep coming up.
Yeah. I'm afraid I just don't understand this realm very much, but why would you keep wanting to get millions and millions and millions of dollars? I just don't get it. At some point, don't you want to just, you know, go to the beach and take a swim and relax for a while?
How much is enough, right?
Really? How
I
much
guess there is it?
There is, for some people, there is no limit, right?
Yeah, I mean, I sometimes question whether I'd work at all if I had that much money that he showed up with. But then, of course, what am I going to do with myself every day?
Right.
I guess everybody has to sort of answer that for themselves. I don't want to get up and sit around in my pajamas all day, even if I'm born with money, I guess, either. So, you know, it's an interesting choice, obviously, to see Jared and Ivanka come to Washington. They were born and raised in the New York area. You know, Ivanka's lived in Manhattan her entire life, except for a brief stint during college. And now they are living in Washington where, you know, they're kind of newcomers, especially in a town here where in Washington, D.C., I think it's like 94 or 96% of the voters voted for Hillary Clinton in the presidential election. It's a very different, probably, social scene for them. And it's a different... You know, the game of Washington is very different from the game of business, and they're learning those rules really quickly right now.
Yeah, they sure are. And when you say that he wanted to restore the Kushner name, Jonathan, to what did the Kushner name once mean? What did he want it to mean again?
I think, you know, the moves that Jared made when he took over the company were really kind of had a bit of prestige attached to them. So he started selling a lot of the apartment buildings that they had at the time. They still own very many, like thousands of apartments, but they sort of started selling like the less prominent properties and trying to get things that would make a bit of a splash. So this is the same time period when he bought the newspaper, the New York Observer newspaper, in 2006. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, owning a newspaper is kind of a good way to get into sort of like the hoity-toity media circles in New York City, right? You sort of have fundraisers and, you know, launch parties and, you know, galas, that kind of thing, black tie affairs, whatnot. So he can sort of mix it up with the folks who, you know, are in the media in New York. And then at the same time, he's buying this, you know, fancy high skyscraper on Fifth Avenue, which immediately puts the family in the mix among, you know, the Manhattan crowd, the Manhattan development folks. And then even further on his career, he starts buying up a whole bunch of the Dumbo neighborhood of Brooklyn, and which is a very kind of up-and-coming, you know, kind of trendy neighborhood where he's building all these offices for tech companies and very high-end, like, loft apartments and condominiums. So he's trying to, it looks like he's been trying to demonstrate that he's on the cutting edge, that he's always pushing further and coming up with new ideas and creativity. And now he's doing that on public policy instead of New York real estate.
And would you agree with the ProPublica story that at one point Kushner talks about these apartment buildings that they own, many are in disrepair, there are a lot of problems with these places, that is still the bread and butter of his businesses?
Well, first thing I want to say is that ProPublica story is phenomenal. I encourage everybody to read it.
It's quite something.
It really is. I mean, almost everybody I know at one point lived in an apartment somewhere, or a lot of people did when they were in high school or college or shortly after college. And I don't think any of us would appreciate being treated the way that those people have been treated that are cited in that story. Mm-hmm. So I encourage everybody to read it and think about it on their own. I'm sorry, I missed your question on that, though.
That still is the bread and butter of the company, those running those kinds of places, those apartments?
Oh, yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, I mean, even if you look at the holdings that they list on, that Jared lists on his disclosure form, it's very difficult to determine what a lot of them are, because a lot of them are just named XYZ LLC. I mean, not actually that, but they have an LLC name, and then there's no real way to know what that company is. If each of those companies has any operations or employees or, you know, any other information about them, because there is very little public information available about them, and there's nothing more required of Jared to disclose of them. But yes, they certainly own thousands of apartments in, you know, obviously Baltimore, New Jersey, even Ohio. I think there's one in Illinois also, if I remember properly.
As did Donald Trump and his father, right? I mean, the parallels are amazing.
Yeah, they really are. So Donald Trump and his father were mostly, I think, in Queens. They had a lot of apartments back in the 60s and 70s. And the Kushner family were investing largely in Jersey. And so, you know, people in New York real estate, of course, is like, you know, a little of an aspect of the people in Manhattan look down on the people who are investing in Jersey, sort of, you know, like that's like a B class of real estate to be in or something. Who knows what's really right to that. But definitely by being in Manhattan, you are in the highest priced, some of the most prominent kind of famous real estate in the country. You are buying on Fifth Avenue. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the great things about the building that the Kushner family bought is that it's a really, you know, it's a fantastic shopping district. People love to go shopping there. And the price that they ended up selling some of the retail space in the bottom of their building for either broke a record or was, like, really close to breaking records at the time for how much retail space costs, how much it costs to sell a shop or to buy a shop and rent a space in New York. So that actually made their investment in that building a bit easier. The problem is that when Jared bought it, and this sort of showed that maybe they didn't put quite as much thought into it as they could have, he bought it right at the very peak of the real estate market before the Great Recession. Mm-hmm. So at a time, you know, in 2007, they paid $1.8 billion for it, again, a record in American real estate. And then right after that, you know, even right then, I think a lot of people were starting to see signs of the economy that things were not going in the right direction. And then right afterwards, the market just collapsed, and everybody, you know, everybody remembers that time. Real estate was in trouble, whether you were in New York City or Albuquerque, New Mexico, or anywhere in between. And they spent the next few years really digging themselves out of a hole there, and they really still are. The building is only about 70% occupied. They still take less money in rent every month than they need to pay the bank, so they're having to kind of pay out of their pocket to fill that gap a little bit every month. And it's a and now Jared is not there to help solve it anymore. So now it's the company's issue to deal with it.
Who's running it now?
Obviously in the White House.
Somebody else in the family or not?
Well, Charlie Kushner is still, you know, he's back in the New York area now. And he you know, he's free to work on it. There are other staff, obviously, at the company that have taken it over since Jared left.
And when it comes to what he probably should divest himself of, you write in your article that he sold only about 10% of his assets within his real estate empire. In order to be completely above board, what should he be divesting? Everything? Or are there other things that definitely should be and he hasn't done it yet?
No, that's a great question. You know, this is sort of uncharted territory here. No one is really accusing Jared Kushner of doing anything improper with what he's disclosed or what he's held on to or what he's sold. You know, he's missed some things that he omitted from his form or were not included on his form that his lawyers say they will add now. So, you know, they need to get that right. But that's not necessarily unusual. The question of what he should do is really a question for voters, I think, and taxpayers. You know, there have been other very wealthy people who have worked in the White House before, or, you know, under Obama or Bush, Clinton, et cetera. But most of them are sort of Wall Street types where they have lots of, you know, investment funds that they have stakes in or stock holdings, et cetera. And, you know, a lot of those get sold or they put them in blind trusts and they dedicate themselves wholly to public service. Jared Kushner and President Trump as well have decided, you know, and said, we are 100% dedicated to public service, but not to the point where we're actually just going to sell our real estate holdings and move on from that life. We're going to continue to own those, and partly that is because it would be very difficult to just sell all their real estate, you know, right as soon as they come in the White House. But there are many, many steps they could take in between what they've done and just selling everything that I think would give some critics and ethical experts a little more peace of mind, I guess. The government's top ethics official has advised publicly that Mr. Trump divest of his private holdings while he's in the White House. And Mr. Trump has decided not to do that. And that is on, you know, that's on the American people to decide what they think of that. Because, again, the ethics rules only go so far in the American government. You know, Jared Kushner has required to disclose what he owns. He has done that. He has decided to sell a small percentage of his holdings that he thinks will make his work in the White House, you know, easier to pursue and cleaner of conflicts of interest. His attorneys say he has signed an ethics agreement with the White House that maybe governs what he will and will not discuss while he works there because of what he still owns, but he will not disclose that, although it's not required that he disclose that. So they're sort of asking the American people to, you know, to trust us. You know, you elected the Trump administration, you elected Trump. This is the administration he chose, and this is the way we're choosing to proceed, even if no one else has done it before. And so understanding what they're doing and what the kind of the population of America is okay with and not okay with is something that is just an ongoing process right now.
Yeah. And just a final question for you. Do you think that he is in trouble with this whole Russia investigation? Jared?
I don't know. And I don't think anybody knows. I mean, the one thing that I will say that it's sort of a little bit of repeating myself, but, you know, the fact that they still have all these financial holdings and have been working as real estate developers their entire adult lives. I mean, both President Trump and Jared Kushner have been focused on advancing these properties and financing these properties their entire careers. And to just, you know, have this surprise win in November and rush into Washington and join the, you know, January 20th Inauguration Day with no government experience and go flip a switch your entire career, just put it away. It's gone, totally gone. And now you are now you're running the United States of America government.
Right, I know.
Forget your previous life altogether. Like, just, you know, wake up in the morning and do it. That would be hard for anybody. They have a lot of rules they need to learn in a very, very short period of time, especially given all the many, many things that Jared Kushner is in charge of. And
I know. It's incredible, isn't it?
is there are there just the facts of life are there are a lot of rules in government. Some people think that maybe isn't great, but a lot of those rules were put in for a reason, and they're going to be they are learning a lot of them right now and are going to be learning more of them.
Thank you so much for being with us. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Jonathan.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, our pleasure. Jonathan O'Connell, reporter at The Washington Post, covers economic development, commercial real estate, the Trump Organization, graduate of UW-Madison, and we thank him. He also gave high praise to the guest we're about to meet, who wrote a really extensive, this guy's a terrific reporter. He not only found out about Jared Kushner's holdings of apartment complexes that aren't in very good shape and the people who live there are not treated very well, but he went to visit a lot of people who had problems. This is a lengthy article, and as our first guest said, it's an article that everybody should read. It's in ProPublica, done in conjunction with the New York Times. We'll be welcoming phone calls during the course of the hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is at Kay Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network. All right, Alec McGillis is with us now, reporter at ProPublica. He covers government and politics. He wrote for The New Republic and was national correspondent for The Washington Post. He was part of a team of reporters that won a Pulitzer for breaking news for their coverage of the Virginia Tech shootings. He's written a very, very interesting, lot of reporting went into this piece, The Beleaguered Tenants of Kushnerville. Tenants in more than a dozen Baltimore area rental complexes complain about a property owner who, say, leaves their homes in disrepair, humiliates late-paying renters, and often sues them when they try to move out. Few of them know that their landlord is the president's son-in-law. And thank you ever so much for being with us again, Alec. It's quite a piece, and you should know that our guest the first half hour of this hour said everybody needs to read your piece, that it's just very, very well done. So compliments to you on what you've done. Thank you.
Oh, well, thanks very much, and thanks for having me on.
Yeah, our pleasure. Well, I guess you just don't know very much about somebody until you go through where they have their money and where the bread and butter is coming from. I had no idea that they owned these kinds of properties. It sort of has a reminiscent feeling of Donald Trump's father and owning the properties in which they were sued for racial discrimination. These places, tell me about how vast these holdings are. And then we need to center on some of the stories that you tell of people who have just been badgered and badgered to pay a rent at a place that's it's a hellhole, and they don't have any money, and they keep getting badgered. The stories just make you heartsick.
No, they really do. The holdings are remarkably extensive. I mean, as you may have mentioned earlier in the show, the family does have roots in this sort of part of the real estate market. The family empire really started in garden apartment complexes in suburban New Jersey, but they sold those off right at the peak of the housing boom last decade, and then got into doing more of this fancy New York real estate, like the big tower on Fifth Avenue. But then just about 5 years ago, Jared bought up a whole bunch of these downscale rental complexes around in the Midwest and in Baltimore. They now have about 20,000 units in Ohio, mostly in Ohio and Maryland now, and the largest single sort of place site for them is in Greater Baltimore, where they have 15 of these complexes, about 8,000 units in all. This is not inner city Baltimore. This is not the Wire with old row houses in West Baltimore. These are complexes built in the 60s and 70s on the edge of town. That sort of received a lot of the white flight from the city, very nondescript complexes with mostly townhouses but also apartments, two bedrooms typically, about $800 to $1,100 in rent typically. And these are the kind of places you pass by in the edge of many American cities, but they're huge. And once you get inside them, you're like, wow, there are a lot of people here. Some complexes have as many as 1,000 units.
Who lives there?
Well, they are. First of all, it's a strikingly diverse population in Baltimore. Some of the complexes are all African American, but others are remarkably mixed racially. So you have white working class, black working class, and then some of them also have fair numbers of Hispanics mixed in as well. They are really kind of the folks living on the edges of the very, very lower edges of the American middle class. And these are not, for the most part, indigent people, because most people in these complexes are paying for their own rent. Some of them have housing vouchers, but most of them do not. So they're people who are just barely managing to get, you know, to write that $1,000 rent check or money order every month. They, you know, they work at the Amazon warehouse. They work at the casino. Right. It's really kind of that. It's a, mm-hmm. that whole realm of sort of the new economy, people in jobs that don't pay very much and typically don't last very long.
Mm. You said money order. They can't even pay by money order anymore, can they? Didn't you say that in the article?
Right. They have to now. They are no longer allowed to pay by money order at the rental office. They have to go to a Walmart. This one of the Kushner company rules is that people have to go to the Walmart to make their payment there, which comes with a small fee every time they do that, and it's also, of course, a real hassle.
Right. And if you don't pay your rent, watch out, because they are going to be out to get you.
They really are. I mean, they are, of course, you know, all, you know, landlords since, you know, the start of time have been aggressive about collecting rent, but the Kushner Company is especially aggressive about it. They you know, start coming after you right away with late fees and court fees. They're also very explicit about pursuing you. They slap your late fees and court notices right on your door instead of putting them in your mailbox or under your door. And so you go into the complexes at a, you know, certain time of month, and every other, it seems like every third door, every fourth door has a big yellow or pink notice slapped on it.
Mm. And you tell so many really heartbreaking stories, and you get filled with outrage after you read these, because people were trying to do the right thing, and to be hounded for, you know, what to them was a huge amount of money, what to the Kushners is just, you know, put it in your penny jar somewhere in the house. Tell us some of the stories, Alec. Camelia Warren, do you want to start with, you start with her in the story?
Sure. I mean, what was striking, what just blew me away as I started looking into this, is that the company was going after people, very aggressive about going after people in court. People who they thought they could get more money out of. People who were either apparently had some back rent that they owed, or had broken a lease and left early. And what was so amazing about it was that they were going after tenants, even tenants who had lived in the properties before the Kushners even bought them. So they bought these places in 2012, 2013. They were going after people who had moved out several years earlier. They basically went back into the records looking for people they could go after. One of the people they went after was this young woman called Camille Warren, who had three kids, single mom with three kids, works in elder home care as a, you know, assisted living person, and home care aide. And she had moved out a couple years before the Kushners even bought this one complex, because the woman next door was suddenly acting very strange and aggressive, banging on the door all night, on the wall all night, waking up Camille's youngest kid. And so she got permission to move out of the complex from the management office. She had a Section 8 voucher, so she got permission. She went and followed all the rules for what she had to do to move out, gave notice, all that, had written permission to move out. Several years after she moves out, she suddenly gets served court papers at her new home saying that she's being sued for several thousand dollars by a company she's never heard of. And she goes to court and is told that she's being sued for having broken her lease. She no longer had that written approval form that saying that she could move out. And so the judge ruled against her. With all the interest and court fees and whatnot, it added up to almost $5,000. She couldn't afford that, of course. She ended up having her wages garnished and her bank account garnished. They cleaned her out. They cleaned out everything. They got about $900 from her, which is all she had in her account at the time. And then so eventually ended up slapping a big court lien against her for the remainder. So she still has a $4,600 court lien against her, which has ruined her credit record. And eventually she did manage to actually get that signed approval form from the county housing department. She got a copy of it. She brought it to court. And even that was not enough to stop this train in its tracks.
Mm.
And it's just extraordinary. When I asked the company about this, this particular case, they had no comment on it.
Mm. And she, you quote her as saying, they know how to work this stuff. They know what to do. I don't know anything about the law. How many of us do, actually, unless you know something about the law? She would have had to have hired a lawyer. Well, she didn't have any money to hire a lawyer.
Right. There's in all virtually all the cases that I studied, there was, people did not have a lawyer. And whereas the Kushner Company has this one firm here in town that handles all these cases for them, they're basically a collection law firm. This is what they specialize in, and they are very good at what they do and very aggressive. I mean, it's completely just tilted playing field as far as that goes. Another extraordinary example of how far they're willing to go. There was a woman, a retired probation officer, who had signed a lease for her daughter some years ago. The daughter had moved out of her lease a couple months early. That seems not to be in dispute. So again, the Kushners buy the complex. Several years later, they start coming after this woman for rent they say they're owed from the daughter having left early. Well, the mom was at the time, in fact, on her deathbed. Mm. She was in hospice care with pancreatic cancer, and the family notified the company of this. They brought records to court showing that how badly off the mother was, and the company persisted anyway in seeking the money back. And they got a judgment against the woman. She died 2 weeks later.
Oh, goodness.
And the widow tried to have it removed, the judgment removed, without success. So it still sits there. There's this open judgment against this against this deceased woman. I asked the company about that example, and they were very blunt. They said, look, she owed us money, and we were going to come after her.
Oh, my. And the places sound like real rat traps, mice traps, ceilings that are falling in. Don't they have to uphold their end of the bargain to make sure that you're in a habitable place?
Well, they do. And in many of the cases, the reason people were moving out in advance of a lease being over was precisely because things were in such bad shape. One woman had raw sewage coming up out of her kitchen sink, flowing out of her kitchen sink. This is after she'd already had a very bad ceiling leak and maggots coming out of her rug. A constant stream of issues with mold, black mold, exacerbating kids' asthma, a lot of ceiling leaks, a lot of mice problems, a lot of toilet, clogged toilets, that kind of thing. The complexes are very large, and they typically have only about four maintenance guys on hand for hundreds and hundreds of units. Mm. So there's just that was a constant theme when I talked to people, and again it was completely connected to their aggressive pursuit, because basically what would happen is you would leave because you get fed up with how lousy things were, and then they come after you for leaving.
Mm. Did you ask for the Kushners to comment?
I did, and they on the maintenance issue, they said that they follow industry standards, that these are aging buildings, so are inevitably going to have problems. On the legal pursuit, they just said, look, these are contracts, these are legal contracts, these leases, and we are simply pursuing trying to uphold those contracts with tenants and get the money that we believe we are owed. They also said that they had what they called a fiduciary obligation to get as much money as they could out of tenants in this way, because they owed it to their ownership partners of these complexes. They share the ownership in some of these complexes, and so they, as the day-to-day managers of the complexes, owed it to their other ownership partners to get as much money as they could, as much revenue as they could out of the tenants.
Well, welcome phone calls. It's a ProPublica piece. It's on our Facebook page, and we urge you to read it. It's a really wonderfully done, disturbing topic, but what a reporter he is. Alec McGillis is the author of this investigation done by the ProPublica and the New York Times, the beleaguered tenants of Kushnerville. He interviews a number of the tenants in more than a dozen Baltimore area rental complexes, and the property owner is is Jared Kushner. It's not just in this area that he owns places. It's in other places as well. And we're hearing the story. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk@WPR.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is @KDunnShow. This is The Ideas Network. Alec McGillis is our guest. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. Lines are open for you right now, 800-486-8655. On Facebook, we have a number of comments. Alec, I'm wondering if this happened with the Kushner properties. When the family wants, when people want tenants out, the amenities get switched off. Did that happen among people you talked to?
It did. In one case, I came across this amazing situation where a college student, it was just completely Kafkaesque. This college student had tried to, had given notice to move out, that she was moving out, did everything right. Her payment at the Walmart that I referred to earlier ended up in the wrong company account. And so they moved to evict her very quickly. They put locks on, changed the locks on the door, so she was actually about to move out, as she had told them she would, but she couldn't get her stuff out because they had changed the locks on the door. And so she then had to stay into the next month. But they then started to want to charge her for that next month's rent, even though they had kept her from moving out when she said she was going to move out. They literally barred her from leaving, and then they were charging her for the next month's rent. They also then turned off her heat and her hot water, and even after she'd gone to court and protested all this, the heat and the hot water were still off. So when I came by one day to visit her, she had all these pots on the stove where she'd been warming, warming water for her for bathing. It was incredible. Mm.
Cindy, our first caller, Fox Cities. Hi, Cindy.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say that I don't think Jared Kushner is very up on history, like Donald Trump. Apparently, doesn't know the history very well. I mean, Jared Kushner is from Jewish descent, I believe, and we all know what the Jews went through with the Germans being persecuted, and it sounds to me now like he's persecuting all these poor people, and I honestly, these stories are just heartbreaking and disgusting.
Alec?
No, they are heartbreaking stories, and I found it often quite really almost depressing to be reporting it. Hearing about one of these after another, I got to say, as I was reporting this piece, I was reading the great new book, Evicted by Matthew Desmond.
Oh, isn't that a wonderful book? I mean, it's hard to read, but
right.
What a book!
And which is and it's so much. This was reminding me of that. And that book is, of course, set in Milwaukee, and he did his dissertation at Madison, and there's this one, line in his book, in the epilogue, which I came across, that just rang so true, where he talks about how poverty is not just the result of a lack of income or a lack of wealth. It's also, in our country, and I'll just quote directly, poverty is not just a product of low incomes, it is also a product of extractive markets. In other words, people are poor also because there are people and companies who are making a lot of money off of them,
mm-hmm.
And that seems to be what has happened in this case. These complexes have proven to be quite lucrative for the Kushner companies.
How lucrative?
Well, at the time that Jared bought them in the first batch in 2011, those were the Midwestern ones, mostly in Ohio. He said that they were going to be making about, I think it was $15 million a year, he said, on those properties.
Ooh.
If you just do the math, I mean, when you have properties of this scale, complexes of this scale, it's, the rent is low by Manhattan standards, but my goodness, if you multiply it by 20,000 units, $1,000 a month, about $1,200 a month, across 20,000 units, and you're spending very little on maintenance or other costs, that adds up. And
mm-hmm.
then you add on top of that all the legal pursuit, the money you're able to squeeze out in additional judgments and interest and all that. It really does add up.
Mm-hmm. I know there were a couple people who were unaware of who owned the property and told you that they had voted for Donald Trump. Were they surprised when they found out his son-in-law was the property owner?
They were very surprised. I mean, they were kind of stunned. It really jarred them clearly when they learned that, and it almost, in some cases, almost kind of instantly changed their estimation of Trump. To make that connection, there were almost no one, regardless of who they voted for, almost no one knew that Kushner was their landlord. Many of them did not even know who Jared Kushner was.
Oh.
Only when I explained who he was, then it rang a bell. One thing that comes through when you're at these communities is just how disconnected they are. I mean, we're just 40 miles from Washington in Baltimore here, but these places are just... It's quite demoralizing to see just how cut off people are from civic and political life. A lot of the people I spoke to did not vote at all, and just have never voted really.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just to see this massive chasm between, on the one hand, Jared Kushner, this incredibly influential young man, who now has the office closest to the Oval Office in the West Wing, who's in charge of all these things in our government, and then at the other, just 40 miles away, all these
right.
people who are living in his units who don't even know that he exists.
Right, yeah. Thanks, Cindy, very much for your call. Zoe in Minnesota, hi.
Hi, I'm glad to be on the radio here. I've been listening to your show, and I think I'm taking a lot of information. I'm an immigrant, first-generation immigrant, and my husband came here only $11 in the pocket. We've been working hard, and I think paying rent is the first priority for all the tenants, and we meet all obligations, and we work hard to get established here. But I hear in your program bashing the landlords and basically get the tenants off the hook on the rent or their responsibility. I don't think it helps the mentality of the whole society. I think the society should. Whatever level you are starting with, you have to work hard to meet your all financial obligations.
Zoe, have you heard the stories, though, that Alec has been talking about? These people were working hard.
Yeah, well, the landlords were working on their leases and trying to enforce it. I think it's completely normal and completely legal. Don't bash the landlords. I think what you have to improve is yourself.
Oh, my. Well, you got to have a heart, too. These people were in pretty dire circumstances, and many were following the law completely, Alec.
Right. That's just the thing. And many of them were following the rules completely. And, you know, in several cases that I report on, these people who had gotten permission to leave their apartment when they did, but the company came after them anyway. I must say also that I've heard from other landlords since the article appeared, including landlords right here in Baltimore, who said, "My goodness, this stuff's terrible, and this
mm-hmm.
is not how we're supposed to do our job, and this is giving a bad name to the rest of us landlords." That there's a way to be a good, profitable, rule abiding, you
mm-hmm.
know, stern landlord without going this extreme.
Yeah. Thanks, Zoe, for the call. Alec, it's a heck of a piece. Thank you so much for the reporting you do. It's just so valuable. It's good. Thanks.
Thanks for having me on, Kathleen.
Yeah, our pleasure. We'll talk to you again the next big show report that he does. Alec McGillis, reporter at ProPublica. The piece is on our Facebook page, just to remind you in case you would like to read it now. It's the Kathleen Dunn Show, and it's definitely worth your time. Thanks very much to Colleen Leahy and to Gretchen Brown for producing and doing on-air production for this program. And a reminder, tomorrow will be a really good show, too. John Dean is with us the first hour of the program tomorrow, and Scott Armstrong, staff member of the Senate Watergate Committee. Should be a fascinating hour. Just finally, thank you all so much. I know I have an audience of dog lovers, and I lost my doggy last Thursday. And your comments just, I just read them over and over. So we're kind of a dog community, a cat community, too, but I'm a dog person. Thank you so much for all of your prayers and comments and stories. It was good. Thanks, everybody, for listening. News is coming up. We'll be with you tomorrow.